And we're holding on page 74 in Shabbos, Os Nun Dalad. We're still in the middle of discussing the question of the Machlokas of Yosi and the Chachamim. What day of Sivan did Matan Torah take place? The Chachamim said the 6th. Rav Yosi said the 6th, or Rav Yosi said the 7th, because Rav Yosi says that Moshe added one extra day of preparation. So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring a proof from a Braisa. A Braisa says, Nisan Shabbat Yotzi Yisrael Mitzrayim. The month of Nisan during which the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, here are the events of that month. That was some of the events of that month. The Yud Dalet Shechtu Pischeihem, on the 14th they shechted their Korbanos Pesach. Over Tesvav Yotzu, on the 15th of Nisan they left Mitzrayim. V'la Erev Lachu Bechoris, that evening the Bechorim of Mitzrayim were killed. So the Gemara interjects, but in the middle of the Braisa, one second, La'erev Sakadaitach, what do you mean in the evening? Usually would La'erev, just like in English, in the evening, usually means the following evening. The Bahamakas Bechoris wasn't the evening, wasn't the night after they left, it was the night before. Elo, you're right. The Gemara says the Braisa means Mi Ba'erev Lachu Bechoris. The night before they left, the Bechorim had been killed. That day, when they left Mitzrayim, was Thursday. Which Tosfos, by the way, brings in the point over here that in that case, it comes out, given that Tesvav Nisan was Thursday, means the previous Shabbos was the 10th, and that's, we know the Torah says, that's when they were supposed to buy their Korbanos Pesach, and that's, you have the famous thing of why that Shabbos HaGadol is because the Bechorim were asking what's going on, and the Jewish people are telling them that Hashem is going to kill the Bechorim and let us out of its name, and they all went to protest to their parents and to Parah, and that whole civil war, the whole famous thing about the Nes Gadol that there was on that day. Marsha brings from a Medrash a little bit differently, that what happened was that the Bechorim would have been very angry at the Jews. They're taking their god, which is the sheep, and tying it to their beds, and they're trying to shecht it, but Hashem prevented them from being able to do anything against the Jews. Anyway, the point is, that's why we call that Shabbos, Shabbos HaGadol. Anyway, continues the Braisa. So thus far the Braisa. Now, let's analyze that, the Gemara says, Midah Chamesa B'Nissan Chamisha B'Shabbos, if the 15th of Nissan was on Thursday, Reish Yalchid Iyer Shabbos, then the following Rosh Chodesh Iyer would have been on Shabbos, because Nissan is normally 30 days, so therefore if the 15th was on Thursday, so was the 29th, 2 weeks later, the 30th of Nissan would have been Friday, and the 1st of Iyer would have been Shabbos. The Reish Yalchid Sivan Chad B'Shabbos, and then Rosh Chodesh Sivan would be on Sunday, because Iyer normally has 29 days. The Gemara is assuming, even though, of course, back then they were Makadosh Al-Pi Ra'iyah, nevertheless, the Gemara is assuming that, generally speaking, the Beis Din would try to have the months have the same lengths as we have them nowadays, even though in principle, as the Gemara, in fact, is going to go on to say, that the months that are nowadays 30 days could be 29 back then, and vice versa, but the Gemara assumes by default that they were the same. So in that case, it comes out that Chodesh Sivan was on Sunday. Kasha l'Rabbanan. Well, that's a question on the Rabbanan. We learned before that the Rabbanan say against Rav Yosi that Rosh Chodesh Sivan that year was Monday, and therefore Shabbos, the 6th of Sivan was Shabbos, and therefore the 6th of Sivan, Matan Torah, was Shabbos. So the answer is Ami Loch Rabbanan. Very simple. The Chachamim will answer you, Iyodau Hushata Aburi Abrua. That year, Iyar, in fact, had 30 days. They added an extra day to Iyar, and it was 30 days, so therefore, good. So Rosh Chodesh Iyar, the first day of Iyar, was in fact on Shabbos, like we said before, but then Iyar had 30 days, the 29th of Iyar, therefore, was also Shabbos, the 30th of Iyar, which there was that year, was Sunday, and the 1st of Sivan was Monday, so it works out. The Gemara says, Toshma, so here, Ein Yaakov is leaving out parts of the Gemara. The Gemara continues to try to bring various other proofs one way or the other. Eventually, the Gemara brings Toshma. But the Pasuk says about when the Mishkan was set up, in the first month of the second year, this is the beginning of the second year since Yitzias Mitzrayim, because years of Yitzias Mitzrayim count from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, on the first day of Nisan, the Mishkan was set up. Where until then, you have every day, they're doing the 7 days in the Lurim. Before that, they were putting up the Mishkan every day and then taking it down at the end of the day, and now instead it's staying up, and it's staying up on a longer-term basis. Anyway, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, That day was crowned with 10 crowns. There were 10 distinguished things, 10 firsts on that day. And now the Braisa is going to go through and list them. Tosfos discusses that on the face of it, there could have been other things that are mentioned also. First of all, Tosfos says that among the things that we're going to have over here, it doesn't mention the first day when the Mishkan was set up. Why not? So Tosfos says two things. First of all, again, it was set up before that, just every day they were taking it down. Or what we mean is, on the first day when the Mishkan was set up, then here's another 10 special things that day, 10 special distinctions that came for the first time that day. Marsha, on the other hand, explains, when you think about it, Marsha says, there were other things the Gemara could have said, that the Braisa could have said, that it was the first four. We're going to go through the list of 10 things, but there's a bunch of others it could have mentioned. So rather, Marsha says, the vote is, the Braisa is focusing on all the things where that Rosh Chodesh Nissan was the first in a way that has to do with the unity of Hashem. All of them, he explains, there were 10 things corresponding to the 10 spheres, and each one of them somehow reflects the unity of Hashem, as we'll go through as Marsha explains it. So the first one is Rishon L'Maaseh Bereishis. It was the first day of Maaseh Bereishis. In other words, it was a Sunday. The significance of that being, Marsha explains, like this, we have when Hashem first created the world. What does it say at the end of the first day? Now, all the other days, it says an ordinal number. It says by here, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, etc. But the first day it doesn't say Yom Rishon. Instead, it says Yom Echad, to hint at the oneness of Hashem, because Hashem was Yochid Ba'olam at that point, because there were no other Nivroim at that point. So now instead we're saying that the word Rishon instead is used here in connection with the setting up of the Mishkan, representing that Hashem is Rishon Ve'en Sheni Loi. He's the first, not in the sense of the first among a list of things, but rather the first as in the only real existence, and there's nothing El Enod Milavad.
Cardinal numbers
are 1, 2, and 3. Ordinal numbers are 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. Yeah. Anyway, Rishon L'Maaseh Bereishis, Rishon L'Nesiim, it was the first day when the Nesiim brought their Korbanos for the Chanukah Sabayis. So the significance of that is, what does that have to do with the oneness of Hashem? Marsha explains, because who was that first Nasi? Nachshon Ben Aminadab. And Nachshon Ben Aminadab had that distinction because it was a Kaddish Shem Shemayim, as we know, he was the first one to jump into the Yamsuf. So therefore, that has to do with the oneness of Hashem, that he was Makadish Shem Shemayim, and demonstrated, in other words, that Hashem is the only true power. Rishon LeKohuna, it was the first day when the Kohenim served in the Mishkan, because up until that point, Moshe had been serving as the Kohen. And that represents the point that the Kohenim specifically are designated to serve the one Hashem. Rishon LaAvoda, it was the first day of the Avoda, meaning the regular Avoda, where the Korbanos Tamid and all the other Korbanos are being brought on a regular basis. Where Marsha explains the vote is, in other words, those Korbanos Tzibur were all brought, they brought them with the Matzah Shekel that every Yid brought. So therefore, that represents that all the Jewish people are joining together as one to serve the one Hashem. Rishon LeYirida Se'esh, it was the first day when the fire came down from Shemayim onto the Mizbeach. So that represents, Marsha says, that Hashem watches over everything in the world. Rishon LeVorech Es Yisrael, it was the first day when the Kohen benched the Jewish people, which represents, again, Hashem's actors, that there's no other power. Did I skip a little? I'm sorry. You're right. Rishon Lachadus Kodshim, Rishon Lishkan Shchina, you're right. The first day when the Rishon L'Yudah Se'esh, Rishon Lachilas Kodshim, the first day when you have the special dinim of eating Kodshim, Rashi explains, up until that point, when Korbanos were brought, they could be eaten anywhere in Machne Yisrael. Now, for the first time, there are rules that some of them can be eaten only inside the Azara. And that represents, in other words, that the person has to make himself on a higher level to connect with the Shechina, so therefore that again goes together with the oneness of Hashem. Rishon Lishkan Shechina, the first day when the Shechina rested among the Jewish people, where there you have, in other words, you have one Hashem above and one unified Jewish nation below, paralleling one another. Rishon Levorech Es Yisrael, the first day when the Kohenim benched the Jewish people with Birkas Kohenim, which Marsha explains, the point of that is that it demonstrates that there's no power that can oppose Hashem and go against that bracha. The same way as we find that Bilam attempted over and over to curse the Jewish people and kept on failing. So Birkas Kohenim represents that absolute power that Hashem has over to bench the Jewish people. And Rishon LeIsur HaBamos, the ninth one is, it was the first day when Bamos are also. Up until that point, you could bring Korbanos anywhere you wanted. Now you can bring them only in the Chotzer, only in the Mishkan. So that represents, in other words, Maharsha says that there's a unique place designated to serve Hashem. So again, that represents Hashem's oneness. In fact, we find throughout Sefer Melachim in particular, it says over and over that people will worship, that will bring Korbanos on Bamos, where after the Beis HaMikdash was built, it was also, and very often that was a gateway into Avodah Zarah, because again, once you have it, you can bring Korbanos anywhere you want, then it's very easy to slide from that into thinking that there are multiple powers. That's for sure. Anyway, and the 10th one is Rishon L'Chadashim. It was the first of the month, because it was the first of Nisan. Which represents, so that Maharsha says, that's the special month that Hashem designated for Nisim. It also represents the mazel of Nisim is Tleh, is the sheep. And Hashem showed that he overpowers that and has the ability to, you know, that was the special mazel of Egypt. That's why they worship particularly the sheep. Nevertheless, Hashem overpowers that, because he's the one who controls it. So each of these things then represents something about the Achdus of Hashem, and that's why he says, that's why you have 10 of them corresponding to the 10 spheres. Anyway, the point is, so the Braisa has listed a bunch of things, and one of them again was that Rosh Chodesh Nissan. Now we're talking just under a year after Yitzhak Mitzrayim, that Rosh Chodesh Nissan was saying was on Sunday. So now the Gemara says, let's calculate backwards. Umidiresh Yalchad Nissan, the High Shata, Chad B'Shava, if Rosh Chodesh Nissan of the year after Yitzhak Mitzrayim was on Sunday, De'eshtaka Dala B'Shava, then Rosh Chodesh Nissan of the previous year would have had to be on Wednesday. 4 days in the week earlier. D'tanya, because we learn in a Braisa. Acherim Oimrim, Acherim, which usually means the mayor says, Ein Bein Atzeres La'Atzeres, there is always between one Shavuos and the next, the Ein Bein Rosh Hashanah or Rosh Hashanah, and there's always between Rosh Hashanah and one Rosh Hashanah and the next, and the same thing any other day in the year. Ela Abba Yomim Bovad, there's always exactly 4 days in the week. In other words, like this. We know we have Chadashim, Malayim, and Chaserim, months of 30 days, months of 29 days. The Chachamim against the Acherim hold that that Beis Din can vary that when necessary. Again, you know, they're calculating when the moon is visible. They're waiting for Edom to come, and then they're going to interrogate them and so forth. So for those and for other reasons, also to make sure as much as possible, they want to make sure that certain Yom Tovim don't come on certain days of the week. As we know, there's built in the rules in our calendar, for example, that Lo Yadu Rosh and other such rules like that, for example. So the Chachamim hold that Beis Din back then would try to do the same thing as well. Therefore, there's no fixed length of a year. Sometimes a year could be a day or two either side of an average. Acherim hold that no. If you look at the average length, the average time from one molar to the next is 29 days, 12 days, 29 days, 12 hours, and 793 halakim. 12 times that equals 354 days and a few hours. So Acherim hold, there's none of this business of postponing Rosh Hashanah or postponing any Rosh Chodesh because you want to make sure that Yom Tovim fall on the proper dates or that the moon is visible or whatnot. Always you have the months, according to Acherim, go in a strict progression, Molei Chaser, Molei Chaser. So therefore you have every year exactly six Molayim, six Chaserim, for a total of 354 days. 354 divided by 7 gives you a remainder of 4. Therefore, Acherim are saying that if 1 year, Rosh Chodesh Nissan, let's say, is on Wednesday, then the following year it's going to be Sunday, and the year after that it will be Thursday, and so forth. Actually, the Gemara in Erechin points out that even Acherim have to agree that once in a while we do have an extra day in a year, because if nothing else, those 8 hours and change from every year, eventually those add up to a day, and then you're going to get out of sync with the moon. But fine, on the whole, basically they're saying that you have 4 days always. And they continue, Vim Hoysa Shonim Uberes, hey, if it was a leap year, then instead, Acherim are saying, then you have 5 days difference between a Yom Tov 1 year and the Yom Tov the next year, because they hold that the extra Adar in a leap year is always 29 days. 29 days is 4 weeks and 1 day. So therefore, that gives you one extra day. The point is, therefore, so based on that idea then, so again, working backwards, if Rosh Chodesh Nissan the second year was on Sunday, then at least according to Acherim, the previous year it would have had to be on Wednesday. Because we're going to assume that first year was not a leap year. There's no particular reason we should assume it was. So then, calculating like we did before, we're going to have to say that Rosh Chodesh Iyar of the year of Yetzias Mitzrayim was on Friday, because again, if Rosh Chodesh Nissan was Wednesday, it would mean that Kesavod Nissan, the day of Yetzias Mitzrayim, was also Wednesday, not Thursday like we said before. Therefore, Chavtes Nissan would have also been Wednesday. Therefore, Aleph Iyar 2 days later would have been Friday. Veresh Yachad Sivan Shamsa, Rosh Chodesh Sivan, if we assume that Iyar was 29 days, as it usually is, would have been on Shabbos. Kasha Bein Rabbi Yosi Bein Rabbanan. So now we have a problem according to both Rabbi Yosi and the Chachamim. Rabbi Yosi is saying Rosh Chodesh Sivan was on Sunday. The Chachamim are saying it was on Monday. But based on this calculation, working backwards from the following year Nissan, you seem to have that it would have been even earlier in the week than that. So how does that work out? So the Anchor answers, Rabbi Yosi Zayin Chaserim Avod. The answer is that according to Rabbi Yosi, we would have to say that year they had a total of 7 Chadashim Chaserim. Unlike Achavim, so we would say not like Achavim. Achavim are saying you always have 6 Chaserim and 6 Malayim. Rabbi Yosi is going to say no, they have to make 1 extra month Chaser that year in order to compensate. But Abonon Ches Chaserim Oban, and according to the Chachamim, you would have to say that between Sivan and the following Sivan, there were 8 Chaserim. Actually, Tosfos, which is printed in the Gemara, points out on the face of it, once we established before that Iyar was Molei that year, at least according to the Chachamim, then maybe that throws off the calculations a bit, and Tosfos says, you're right, maybe we're only saying 8, because according to the Rabbanan, because we're sort of partially following Rabbi Yosi, but really according to the Chachamim, it would have been needed, only 7 would have been needed. Marshal and Marshal talk about that, and then go back and forth on it about how exactly you figure the calculation. But the bottom line is, the Gemara is saying, yes, there were more Chadashim Chaserim that year than there usually would be. Just like in our calendar nowadays, sometimes we have a Shana Malaya and a Shana Chasera, so that year was a Shana Chasera. And therefore, they had an extra 1 or 2 months that were chaserim that year in order to make things work out. Okay. The Gemara says, Toshna, let's try to bring another proof. The Tanya B'Seder Olam. We learn in Seder Olam. Seder Olam is a collection of braises that deals with Jewish chronology. Now, you have like this. There's a lot of psukim all over Tanakh that tell us dates. Sometimes they tell us the actual month and date of an event. Sometimes they just tell us the year. Sometimes it's actually not the year. It's not like they have anything in Tanakh that's explicitly counted as X number of years since Ma'aseh Bereishis, but it'll tell us X number of years passed, and then this happened. And you'll have a lot of times there are psukim that seem to contradict each other, or it's not so clear from the psukim when the thing actually happened. So Seder Olam is a collection of braises that deals with reconciling those. All the well-known things that we know, the idea, for example, that the Jewish people were 210 years in Mitzrayim rather than 400, as it would seem, or 430, as it would seem from the Psukim, or the fact that Shlomo became king at age 12, or there are all kinds of different things like that. All those kinds of things that are not explicit in the Psukim come from Seder Olam. So you have a braisa in there. Nissan shebo yotzu yisrael mitzrayim, the Nissan in which the Jewish people left Mitzrayim. Ba'abo also shochtu pischeyen, they shechted their korbanos Pesach on the 14th. Bachmisha also yotzu, they left Mitzrayim on the 15th. Ba'osayim erev Shabbos hoya. That day was erev Shabbos. Now, unlike the earlier braisa, where we said that day of the week was Thursday, this braisa from Seder Olam is saying that it was actually Friday. Which in that case, it would mean that the day they bought their Korbanos Pesach was not Shabbos, and then the whole thing that Tosfos brought before that Shabbos and Gadol wouldn't really fit. But anyway, that's the Braisa. So again, the Gemara says, let's calculate. And with Duresh Yavchud Nissan Erev Shabbos, if according to that Braisa, again, if Kesavod Nissan is Erev Shabbos, means Rosh Chodesh Nissan was also Friday, Resh Yavchud Iyar Chad B'Shabbos, then using the same method as before, we would come out that Rosh Chodesh Iyar was on Sunday, with Sivan B'Terei B'Shabbos, and Rosh Chodesh Sivan would be on Monday. Kashal Rav Yosi, so that's a contradiction to Rav Yosi, who says before that Rosh Chodesh Sivan was on Sunday. The answer is Rabbi Yosi will tell you, you know what, this braisa is not according to my opinion. I have to agree, this braisa is only according to the Chachamim. Mind you, the Gemara elsewhere tells us in Yevamos that Rabbi Yosi is actually the compiler of Seder Olam. So we have to say that Rabbi Yaakov Emden brings over here, this would be an example, and the Gemara gives such examples in other places as well, that he included this braisa in the collection, even though he himself disagrees with it. Because it was a known braisa that was taught among the Chachamim, so therefore he included it even though he disagreed with it. Okay. Toshma, Rabbi Yosi, let's try to bring another proof. Rabbi Yosi says, Basheni Ola Moshe V'Yorad on the second Monday of that week of Matan Torah, Moshe went up to Har Sinai, and when Hashem told him Ba'atim Tiyuli Mamlachas Kohenim Begoy Kodesh, and he went down later that day and told the Jewish people. Bashlishi Ola V'Yorad on Tuesday he also went up. And Hashem told him the mitzvah of Hagbolah, to fence in Har Sinai and not to come close to it. The Yorad, he came down and told the Jewish people. The Dalad Yorad, on Wednesday, he came down to tell them to separate from their spouses. The Shuv Lo Ola, and then until Aseres HaDibros, he didn't, until Matan Torah, he didn't go up again. So they want to ask, something's missing. What do you mean he came down on Wednesday? Where does it say that he went up? That we should say he came down. You're right. It means on Wednesday also he went up to receive the next instructions from Hashem, where Hashem tells him to separate from their spouses for the 2 or 3 days, and then the Yorad, and he came down and told the Jewish people. And then we're saying that he didn't go up again until Matan Torah when he and others went up as well. Yeah, together with him went Aaron, Nadav, Raviu, etc. On Thursday of that week, he built a Mizbeach, as we have at the end of Parashas Mishpatim, where it describes that, and brought Korbanos on it. Marshall explains, since he wasn't going up on Thursday, because there were no further instructions for Hashem to give him before Matan Torah, then therefore he wasn't going to just waste the day. So therefore he used that day to build the Mizbeach and then bring the Korbanos and read the Sefer Abris to the people and everything that's described at the end of Parashas Mishpatim. Bashishi lohoy lepnai. Then Reb Yossi continues, on Friday he had no time. So we have to ask, my lav mishum Torah. Why wouldn't he have had the time for anything else? The pashtus, because that day was Matan Torah. So that would mean that Rabbi Yossi agrees that Matan Torah was on Friday. And that it was on the 6th of Sivan, not on Shabbos the 7th, like we said before. The answer is why? No, you could say the reason why we're saying that he was busy on Friday. Mishum Torah Shabbos, he was busy preparing for Shabbos. So Marashah explains, in other words, what the Gemara is saying is that, because of Torah Shabbos, he didn't go up to Har Sinai as he had earlier days. So instead, he was busy preparing for Shabbos. But certainly, the reason why Moshe added that extra day was not because he didn't want to distract people from preparing for Shabbos. Obviously, receiving the Torah is much more important, but because, as the Gemara said before, he wanted to give them 3 full days of preparation, and he doubts in that Hayoyim has to be like Mocher, and you have to have 6 complete onus in case anybody is Polish Shechvasera, and so on and so on. The Gemara says, let's try to bring another proof. Dorash Hahu Glila Alei D'Rav Chista. A certain person from the Galil, from the north of Eretz Yisrael, darshan as follows in front of Rav Chista. Alei literally means over, means on top of. Rashi explains it means in front of him. The metaphor, we had this earlier in the Masechta as well. The Rosh Yeshiva sits, and the darshan, such as this Galila, stands up next to him, so therefore it looks like he's standing over him. So he darshan in the presence of Rav Chista, Brich Rachmana, blessed is Hashem, D'yohad Uriyan Tlisoi, who gave us a 3-part Torah. Rashi explains that means Torah Neviim Uksuvim. Iyun Yaakov brings another explanation. It means another explanation from Rishonim that it's Torah Shebichsav, Torah Shebalpeh, and Nister, the hidden parts of Torah. And the Ritva, I think, has a different explanation that it's the halachas of Torah, the stories of the Torah, and the secrets of the Torah. Anyway, so you have a 3-part Torah. La'am Tlisoi, to the 3-part people, made of Kohenim, Leviim, and Yisraelim. Al Yad Tlisoi, through the 3rd one in his family, Moshe had 2 older siblings, Aaron and Miriam. On the 3rd day, the 3rd day of the preparation for Matan Torah, in the 3rd month, Sivan. So the Gemara points out, Kaman, now who would this Jerusha be like? Kirabbanan. It would have to be like the Rabbanan, because according to Rabbi Yossi, it wasn't on the 3rd day of preparation, it was on the 4th day. According to him, you had 3 complete days of preparation, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and then they received the Torah on Shabbos. Whereas according to the Chachamim, you have the days of preparation are Thursday and Friday, and then comes Shabbos as the day of Matan Torah. So this Galilah's Jerusha is specifically according to the Chachamim. What's the deeper idea behind this business of all these threes? So Marsha explains that whenever you have a group of 3, you always have the first one has a certain advantage, the second one includes that and goes beyond it, and then the 3rd one goes beyond the 2 before it. So each of these things you have, for example, you have the three parts of Torah. If we say, like Rashi, that they're Torah, Nevi'im, or Ksuvim. You have Ksuvim has tremendous Kedusha, but Nevi'im is still higher, and Torah, the five Chumashim, is the highest of all. When it comes to when it comes to the people, you have Yisrael, the Yisraelim have Kedusha. We're much higher than the Goyim. Above us are the Levi'im, and above the Levi'im even are the Kohenim. The three siblings, Miriam has a tremendous degree of nevuah, but she wasn't involved in transmitting the Torah to the Jewish people so much. Aaron is greater because there are actually places in the Torah where Hashem speaks to Aaron or to Moshe and Aaron and gives them mitzvahs. And highest of all is Moshe. The 3 days of preparation. Now again, each one has an advantage over the previous one. The first one, as we said, according to the Chachamim, was an incomplete one. It started only in the morning instead of the night before. The second one is a complete one. The third one is when they actually toveled. They toveled right before it. And Yalchut Lisoy, the third month, is that they had a progression in terms of mitzvahs. That in Nisan, Hashem gave them two mitzvahs, of Milah and Pesach, so they can start separating themselves from the Tumah of Mitzrayim. The second month, they had more mitzvahs that were given in Morah, like we talked about yesterday, and then mitzvahs in connection with the Mon. And then in the third month, they came to the highest level of receiving the Torah. So in each of these triads over here, in each of these groups of three, you have the third one is the greatest among over all the other two. Then there are lots and lots of other explanations. The Maharal makes a point in a number of places in his Sfarim that three represents joining together the two extremes. You have, and then we have this Api Kabbalah and Api Chassidus. You have, for example, Chesed to one extreme, Gvura to the other extreme, and then comes Tiferes, which mediates between the two of them. So therefore, that's why the Torah, which is given to mediate, to mediate between the world and the Eibishter, therefore it has to have been given with a group of threes. Chassidus also talks about in a similar vein that three represents making shalom in the same way. You have two opposites, and then the third one mediates, and then finds a compromise between them. So you have all those ideas, and many, many more. There's also Etz Yosef also mentions the idea that we know the pasuk says that the threefold cord won't be very easily broken when you have three strands that are twisted together to make a rope. So in the same thing, the Torah, for it to be a permanent thing, had to be given with groups of threes. The Gemara continues. Let's have other drushes about Matan Torah. The pasuk says, "Vayisyatzu b'sachti sahar." They stood on the underside of the mountain. Now, in a simple sense, you would say "sachti sahar" means at the base of the mountain. But the Gemara Daushins, "Omer of Avdimi b'chama b'chasa." And the point is, because usually the expression for that would be "beragla yahor" or something like that. "Sachti sahar" means literally under the mountain. This teaches us that Hashem overturned the mountain on top of them like a barrel. When you turn over a barrel, you have the hollow on the inside, the same way that the Jewish people are under the hollow of Har Sinai, literally encompassed by it. But Amalehem, and Hashem tells him, "Im atem makabel v'satodem mutav." If you accept the Torah, then good. "V'im lav," and if not, "Shem kehek for us," then you're going to be buried. Malchus says also the fact that it could have said tachas aher, and it says bit tachtis, which suggests that they were inside the bottom of the mountain. So now the question becomes, why did Hashem have to do that? Tosfos asked the question. I mean, they just said Nasav and Nishma a couple of days earlier. Why is Hashem having to force them to receive the Torah now? So Tosfos answers because, first of all, Tosfos answers because maybe when they see the tremendous fire and everything else that's accompanying Matan Torah, they might have been scared and wanted to back out. Therefore, Hashem has to sort of force it on them at that point to prevent them from backing out.
But if they wanted to live, they really had no free choice. They had to.
So that's the point. That's what we're saying. In other words, even though they had said Nasav Mishma, now there's the concern they might try to get out of it, and therefore Hashem has to force them. Some of the Mephoshim also bring over here something from Medrash Tanchuma that gives a different point when they had said Nasav Nishma, Etz Yosef brings over here from Medrash Tanchuma, that when they said Nasav Nishma, that they were prepared to accept Torah Shabbat. Because Torah Shabbat Stav is not that difficult. There's not really that many details in it. But Torah Shabbat Peh, which has all the little fine details in it that are much harder to keep, that they weren't so willing to accept. And therefore, Hashem had to force them into that. The Maharal talks about the idea that given that, as the Gemara is going to say further on, the Gemara is going to say soon, that it was absolutely necessary in order for the world to continue to exist. It was absolutely necessary that the Jewish people accept the Torah. Otherwise, the Gemara is going to say soon, the world would have returned to Torah Mavoyu. So Hashem had to kind of manipulate it. If it had been left up to the Jewish people's free choice, then it would look at that. Hashem made a world, and then he looked at the whole existence of it. He made just depend on whether people feel like doing something or not. And what, if they did, after all, people's free choice is, so to speak, not in Hashem's hands. So what, if they had chosen differently, then Hashem wouldn't know what to do, so to speak. So therefore, Hashem had to kind of manipulate it to force them to demonstrate that no matter what it was going to happen, this is all part of Hashem's plan. In Chassidus, it talks about the idea that the kofa, this kofa and hakigigis, is more the fact that ever since Yitzias Mitzrayim, they had been receiving one chesed after another from Hashem. So one expression after another of Hashem's love for them is Sirusa Bila'ela, without very much, if any, is Sirusa Bila'sata. So that itself basically constituted kind of a forcing. And after they had received that tremendous outpouring of Abba from Hashem, what else could they do but accept what Hashem is telling them? Similar to, you have these days in Tanya, the Alter Rebbe talks about the idea, for example, you have the Moshul that Alter Rebbe brings at the beginning of Perek Mem Vav, where you have this poor, miserable guy, homeless guy in the streets or whatever, and all of a sudden the king comes out of his palace and hugs him and kisses him and brings him into his innermost chambers and so on and so forth. What else? Any normal person is going to have a tremendous habit for the king at that point and do whatever he wants, in the same way that's with Hashem and us Jewish people. So that's the forcing that Hashem did, not so much by forcing, but rather by giving such an outpouring of Abba that there's nothing else they could do but to say yes. So, Amar Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Mikan Moedah Rabba L'Oraisa. Based on this, then, we have a tremendous Moedah about the receiving of the Torah. A Moedah, literally a Moedah means a notice. What it means is, in Halacha, you can have, for example, where Reuven is pressuring Shimon, let's say, to sell his field thing. Shimon doesn't want to sell, but Reuven is putting pressure of whatever kind. So finally, what Shimon does is he calls together Edim. He gives them an official notice. He tells them, you should know this, that I'm going to be selling Reuven this field or doing whatever, is under duress. I plan later on to take him to Beis Din and protest against the sale and say that it was not valid. And then he goes, having made that Moedah in front of those Edim, then he goes and sells the field to Reuven, and now he still has recourse. He can still bring those Edim to Beis Din later and get the sale voided or whatever else it was that was done under duress. That kind of concept is called a Moedah in Halacha. So now Rav Acha bar Yaakov is saying, you have a Moedah, big Moedah, about the Torah. How could Hashem hold the Jewish people to the responsibility of keeping the Torah? We could say we were forced into it. It would be like that kind of thing where a person is being forced into selling. So Omer Rava Afapikain Hodr Kiblua Bimeach Hashvesh. Before we even get to that, actually, Tosfos points out, now there were further on, later on in the Midbar, towards the end of the 40 years, Moshe made a bris with the Jewish people and beswore them to keep it. They accepted the Torah and how Grizim and how Abel, and they accepted it over there, and there wasn't any Kofalim, how Kigigas over there. At the end of his life, Yeshua also tells the Jewish people to make sure to follow what Hashem is saying. So therefore, what's Rav Acha bar Yaakov saying? Where's the Moedah? Even if they were forced into it by Matan Torah, they reaccepted it several times willingly after that. So Tosfos says, look, first of all, most of those things were done, this that Moshe made a new bris with them, and this that they had by Har Gerizim and Har Ebal, those were also commandments from Hashem to do. So that also amounts to forcing. It's not like they were given an alternative in the matter. Hashem said they have to do it, so therefore they had to do it. So you could say the same Moedah applies to them also. As far as what Yeshua did at the end of his life, where he gathered them together and warned them that they have to listen to what Hashem says, or else they're going to be in trouble, really, Tosfos says, if you look at the psukim carefully, you'll see that Yeshua is really only focusing on Avodah Zarah. So you could say then, so they would still have a Moedah Rabbah. Fine, we willingly accepted when Yeshua is beswearing us and telling us to be careful, we accepted that we won't worship Avodah Zarah. But what about all the other mitzvahs? So therefore, for that, there would still be the Moedah that we were forced into it by Hasim.
The bottom line is that whatever Hashem wants, one way or another, he's going to get it.
Right, but still, we're saying that the Rav Acha bar Yaakov is pointing out that there is a Moedah. So now Marshall says that would explain, so far at least that would explain, even before we get to what Rav is going to answer against Rav Acha bar Yaakov, we could say that would explain how it is that the Jewish people could be punished during the time of the first place Mikdash, because they were worshipping Avodah Zarah. What Tosfos is saying is, at least to not worship Avodah Zarah, that at the end of Yeshua's life, that they did accept willingly. So now, later on, when they worshipped Avodah Zarah, then Hashem could hold them to account for that. But as far as the other mitzvahs, that's what Acha bar Yaakov is saying. On the face of it, they have an out to argue that that they didn't accept it willingly. Omar Rava, Acha Pekin, Hodu Kiblu Abimei Achashverosh. Nevertheless, they don't really have a Majah, after all, because they re-accepted the Torah willingly in the time of Achashverosh, after Haman's Zera was bottled. Because the pasuk says the Jewish people affirmed and accepted. That means kimu mashik kiblu kvar. It means they affirmed what they had already previously received. They'd received the Torah 900 years earlier, and now they willingly reaccepted it on themselves in the wake of the story of Purim. So the idea, in other words, Marshall says the Poshita Pshat is that's talking about that they accepted the mitzvahs of Purim on them. But still, we also doubt that it means that Marshall mentions that a Tosfos actually mentions as well that there's other drushes that the Gemara mentions from it also. It also means, for example, that the Jewish people down here accepted the mitzvahs of Purim, and up in Shemayim they also ratified that that's the correct thing to do, and these are going to be mitzvahs from now on. The Marshall explains, okay, but all of these drushes are all kind of equal. Each one of them is equally as based as the other ones, and therefore we can douch in all of them from the same words. The vote is, in other words, so our Kosev brings over here from the Rashba that we're saying that the Jewish people were forced into receiving the Torah. But after all, Hashem gave them Eretz Yisrael on condition that they would keep the Torah. We find that clearly at the end of Kapitel Kuf Hei and Tillim, Vayitn Lehem Artis Goyim. Hashem gave them the lands of the nations, Bavur Yishmeru Chukav, in order that they should keep his mitzvahs. So now when they violated the Torah, then they lost their right to live in Eretz Yisrael. But now, what happened when Rav Acha bar Yaakov is saying they could have had a Majah, that's referring to after they went into Golos, they could have argued that now we shouldn't be bound to keep the Torah anymore. And in fact, we find that during Golos Babel, some people came into Yechezkel with exactly that argument. It's mentioned in Pesukim in Yechezkel, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin expands on it, that people came to Yechezkel and said, you know, when a couple gets divorced, or when a master sells a slave, they have nothing to do with one another anymore. So Hashem has divorced us, and Hashem has sold us all to the Goyim, therefore we have no more responsibilities towards Hashem, and Yechezkel tells them in Hashem's name, absolutely not, that's not the case. So now what happens is, when they come back to Eretz Yisrael in the times of Ezra, which is a few years after the Nes Purim, then they reaccepted on themselves willingly, now that Hashem had saved them from Achashverosh and from Haman, and they survived that, now they willingly reaccepted the Torah, and now they're accepting that the Rashba even uses the expression that it was more precious to them than being them the redemption from Mitzrayim, because their lives had been saved. At least in Mitzrayim, their lives in principle were in danger. So now, therefore, they willingly reaccepted the Torah, and now that Moidah Rabba goes away, now there's no more excuse that they could ever say that we didn't accept the Torah wholeheartedly. In Chassidus, in particular, it talks about the idea that where one way we see that acceptance in the times of Achashverosh is we see that during all those 11 months after Haman's Zera, you know, he made his Zera in Nisan, and then the battle over there was the following Adar. During all that time, Jews could have converted to another religion, and they would have been safe from Haman's Zera. The Zera was only against Jews who were actually identifying as Jews. But not one year did, every single year, stayed faithful, showing that they're reaccepting the Torah voluntarily. And there's many places in Chassidus where it talks about the idea that this is an example of how the Sarusa de la Sata is stronger, that here you have the acceptance because of the Sarusa de la Eva of Yitzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah was not strong enough, but the one that's based on a Sarusa de la Sata, when they volunteered, when all there was a nest embedded in Teva, and they still took it seriously and reaccepted the Torah, then that has a permanence, and from then on, the Jewish people's acceptance of the Torah is very strong. So And there are Mephoshim, by the way, who say that really Rav Acha by Yaakov doesn't mean that before that they could have had an excuse not to say the Torah. But what we're saying is Minim at least could claim that after all, based on this Kofa Halein Hauke Gigas, we have an excuse not to accept the Torah. So Rava says, fine, that excuse might have worked for you Minim until the time of Ahasuerus, but ever since then it doesn't work anyway, so don't think you can get away with it.
Okay.
Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gu'ola, Yud Aleph Iyar. Talking about Nezirus, this is from an excerpt from a Sikha from Parashas Nosa, so and one of the subjects in that parasha is Nezirus. So the ultimate Kedusha of Nezirus will be La'asid Lavei, because then, as the Rambam says, the Jewish people will be free of any other cares and be free to delve into the Torah and the Chachma, and the entire occupation of the whole world will be only to know Hashem. So therefore, so people won't need to be separated from the tivus of the world, because every year, anyway, is going to be Kodesh Lashem. So in that sense, you're going to have like a higher level of Nezirus. Continuing on Halachas of Shech Yonu and whatnot. We talked about yesterday that you make Shech Yonu on new fruits, where it's a new fruit that's available this year. And we talked about different sub-varieties of fruit and so forth. Now, what happens if a person made Shech Yonu on grapes? So nowadays, this is not really a relevant halacha. We have grapes all year round, but let's say, so Yesh Omrim, that you wouldn't again say Shech Yonu on wine, because after all, wine comes from grapes. On the other hand, Yesh Omrim, that wine has a special simcha more than grapes. So therefore, the best thing is, if you made Shech Yonu on grapes, then if you're drinking new wine from that season, make Shech Yonu on something else instead and have in mind the wine as well. Now, if, on the other hand, if you made Shech Yonu on the wine, then everybody will agree you don't make on the grapes, because the grapes are less important than the wine. All this is only when you're drinking the wine when it's still grape juice and or newly made, and therefore it's noticeable as new wine. If you're only drinking it only after it fermented, then anyway you don't say Shech Yonu, because there's really no noticeable difference as much between old wine and new wine, and therefore it's not recognizable as a new product such that you'd have a simcha that warrants Shech Yonu. You do have, by the way, other dinim when you're drinking a new vintage of wine. You say, I tell you, I made it. That's a whole different set of halachas. Okay, another din as far as Shech Yonu on fruit. You don't say Shech Yonu on unripe fruit. You're only when the fruit is fully ripe. The minhag is also you don't say Shech Yonu on vegetables or roots or things like that, because those can last a long time in storage, and they're also very common, so you don't really have, and you also don't really have much simcha as far as a new kind of vegetable being available.
So if the fruit is ripe, unripe,
you
take a bite of it, and it could be it's not really ready
yet,
but you thought it was ready.
Usually you can tell whether a fruit is usually when it's ripe, it's usually softer, or it has a certain aroma, or it changes color, or whatever. One more thing, another point is that you don't say Shech Yonu on a new fragrance, on a new smell. On the other hand, according to the Alter Rebbe, you should below Shema Malchus, because the neshama is eternal, and therefore you can't really say that you have and the neshama is what benefits from a smell. You can't really say that it's benefiting from something new that it didn't have before, because the neshama is higher than Zman. Also, you have an idea that Yerushalmi says a person is going to end up giving a din v'cheshbon on everything that he saw and didn't eat. Because the Eibush to put you in the world and expect you to enjoy the world in a way, of course, where you're doing it l'shem shamayim. We find, for example, that Rabbi Lazar would save up his coins all year round, and every year Yerushalmi mentions, and then every year he would buy all the various kinds of new fruits and new produce that were available in order to be able to say Shech Yonu and thank Hashem for it. I'm Hanan Ben Akasha, I'm